Good morning.
Good morning.
Ooh, I'm excited to be here this morning. So my talk today is addressing the ninth grave precept, which is I like the first part of it. So transforming suffering into wisdom. I take up the way of not indulging in anger. So I like that first part a lot because unlike the rest of the grave precepts, when I first hear the idea about not indulging in anger, I get angry. Like, what? I have every, they're my feelings. I have every right to be angry. That's ridiculous. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, but like when I see the first precept, I don't go like, oh, well, of course I need to kill things. You know, or like, oh, you know, well, of course I need to misuse my sexuality. Like, no, I don't. That's like ridiculous. I don't have that at all. And this is something, my anger is what really was a doorway for me to enter this path. Because like 5 years ago or so when I had breast cancer, and one's mortality kind of rears its head, you know, and I was like, oh, you know, I really don't want to die an angry old woman. And I feel like I'm going that way. So it sort of awakened this desire to awaken, the desire to be different. You know, this bodhicitta, this internal flame of like, I think there's another way. And so I started sitting in this particular fashion and started reading books that were not too complicated. A lot, you know, like 30 years ago when I first started sitting meditation in kind of the yogic form, I really tried to read Buddhist books and I couldn't get there. But when I actually started sitting Zazen and doing sessions and having a teacher, that helps a lot. I started to kind of get a little bit of understanding, like, oh, okay. So one of the great illustrative stories is when, it was just years ago, I was, it was my grandson was 3 years old, so let's see, he's 16 now, so it's like 13 years ago. And so I'm coming in the garage, and I'm driving in, and my husband's car, or van actually, is in the other spot, the side door's open, and I can see my grandson is just like pitching a fit. I mean, just screaming and wailing and, like just having a horrible time. And my very first thought was, oh, that's what I look like. So then I got out of the car, closed the door. My back had gone out, so I couldn't pick him up. But I ushered him over to the side of the van, and I gave him a hug, and I held his hand, and we walked inside the house. And so then we sat on the couch, and I set him on my lap, and I just held him. And he just sobbed and sobbed and sobbed until he was done. You know, and then he took a deep breath in. It's like, okay, seems like it's passed. Are you okay now? And in the other room, Tom and his brother were doing something. I don't know, talking about something, probably how to build something, who knows what. Maybe drawing a picture of it, I don't know. And I'm like, you want to go see what they're doing? He's like, you know? So then I just like let him go, and he went along his way. And he did that. And it was really helpful for me, because that's kind of the best thing to do when I feel angry, is to... when I'm having an awesome day, I can remember to treat my anger like a little kid. And in Thich Nhat Hanh's book about anger, he talks about that. He talks about taking really good care of our anger. Now, it doesn't mean that I thought what I used to think that it meant was I just need to not be angry. Like, just quit that. Stop being angry. Like that. I'm being angry with myself for being angry. It just doesn't, and that just, like, you know, just tightens the screws a little more and makes me just want to bust out. If I can remember, you know, to treat myself gently, which doesn't come really easily to me, for whatever reason, that really seems to help. And I don't think it means don't feel my feelings. I think what it means is to realize, like, if that stuff comes up, like, oh, that's an indicator. Sometimes when I'm angry, it's an indicator that something is really not the way that it should be. Something is wrong, and I feel angry about it, and sometimes it can spur me to action. My goal is to move into a place where, rather than reacting to something, that I can feel that, and then I can have a choice on what to do. Because it used to be, and still sometimes, that something, whatever it was I was going to say, was out of my mouth before I knew what I was going to say. So what I'm working towards is, even if I want to say something about something that I think is not right, to do it in such a way that I can be more loving, I can be kind, I can be, remember that whatever situation, whatever, like, remember that I'm not the only one suffering. Remember that we're all kind of in the soup together, we're suffering together, that probably saying something harsh is not really going to be helpful. I used to notice I did this. This was a grandkid, you know. It was a grandkid thing, you know. So they're older now, so we can hang out more. But like, it used to be, I would get the voice when I would be scared. Like, you know, they're going to run across the street. I'm like, durr! You know, like, it's the voice. Ah! You know, like, and it's not. It's because stop. You know, because it would feel like it was an emergency. It would feel like somebody's going to die here, and I got to stop that. I mean, that and that's kind of. That's sort of my response to life. It's my natural, unaided response to life. It's like, ah! Like, you know, it's just, I'm so scared, you know, and I'm so ready to, like, think everything is calamity that I need to fix right now, that's my response to it. It's not a very skillful response. I love Buddhist, like, it's not very skillful. And I really do want to work on being more and more skillful. So one of the things I realized that often when I get in, that, so other than like some kid's going to run out in the middle of the street, there is some like real emergency that I need to attend to right now so somebody doesn't die. You know, that's pretty rare. The rest of the time, you know, maybe I can see what, you know, kind of look deeply at what's going on. So I'm trying to think if I can think of a current situation. But often what I find out is that when something happens, it's just not the way I thought it was going to be. That's really all it is. And then to boil that down further, I'm just not getting my way. Usually, like, that's when I get angry. I'm just not getting my way. This is not the way I thought it was going to be. Like, it used to be. I get to work on this a lot with my husband. So it used to be that we were going to go to dinner, and I wouldn't get angry, but like, he would take a different route than I thought he was going to take. Like, he drove there a different way, so I'm going to get mad about that. I mean, it's just, that's kind of ridiculous, but I used to do that. One time when we were first married and we were at like this retreat, it wasn't a silent retreat, but it was a different kind of retreat, and there were all kinds of options for people to do, and one of the options was bicycle riding. And so when we were in that, like, I just want to be glued to you all the time, just, you know, like, I just wanted to walk around in his pocket, you know. And so I'm like, where's Tom? And they're like, he went on a bicycle ride? He didn't ask me to go on a bicycle ride. And I was like really pissed because I felt hurt, wounded that he didn't want to be with me every single second too. And I can't imagine what that would be. And so then I got really annoyed by it. And so then I I got on the bike and I went looking for him. And I've heard this expression that goes like this. Like, do I want to be right or do I want to be happy? And as I'm riding the bike, feeling annoyed, you know, really pissed, like, you know, whatever, he doesn't love me. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, Like, do I want to be right or do I want to be happy? And I was like, I want to be right. And so I wrote a song about it. And it's a sing-along song. And I'm going to play it for you now. And it's called, it's the resentment song. So I'm going to teach you the chorus. So thank you so much. So it goes, I'm going to hang on to this resentment. So let's try it again. I'm going to hang on to the resentment, and then you're going to say it back. I'm going to hang on to this resentment.
I'm going to hang on to this resentment.
I'm going to hang on for dear life.
I'm going to hang on for dear life.
I'm going to hang on to this resentment.
I'm going to hang on to this resentment.
Because I just love to be right.
I just love to be right.
That's it. Okay. All right. I think it'll work. Okay. I'm gonna hang on to this resentment. I'm gonna hang on for dear life. I'm gonna hang on to this resentment. Why? 'Cause I just love to be right. If my mama had loved me a little more, I'm sure I wouldn't be so afraid. And if that teacher had been a little kinder, I'm sure I would have made the grade. Here we go. I'm gonna hang on to this resentment. I'm gonna hang on for dear life. I'm gonna hang on to this resentment. Why? 'Cause I just love to be right. If my husband would just listen to me, I'm sure he'd be much happier. And if that fool in front of me would just step on the gas, I'm gonna hang on to this resentment. I'm gonna hang on for dear life. I'm gonna hang on to this resentment. Why? 'Cause I just love to be right. So here I am, I'm making my plans, knowing I know what's right for me and everybody else. I gotta tell you, when things don't go my way, it really bites. I'm gonna hang on to this resentment. I'm gonna hang on for dear life. I'm gonna hang on to this resentment. Why? 'Cause I just love to be right. Woo! You guys did great! All right, I'm gonna hang on to this for a minute. All right, so that's the thing. That's kind of the thing. And, you know, I realize what happens when I hang on to my resentment is that it creates kind of a poison, you know, kind of a poison between me and another person. And it's really harmful. And usually the thing that cures it is talking about it in a way that, where I'm owning my part of it and where I give the other person space to just really talk about what's going on with them, like what's really going on. And usually somewhere in there, I and this is the weird thing, like to be married to somebody is a huge thing. You know, I'm really, really, I'm so, so grateful to my husband because he has a way of being really non-reactive, you know, at least on the outside, you know, and it's really, really helpful for me. And so, you know, when I'm in a place where, like I was, we came home from the contest, it was a songwriting contest thing up in Duluth I did last weekend or weekend before last. And for whatever reason, I was like hearing everything he said as if it were a criticism. You know, and that, you know, that was not, that was, you know, delusions are inexhaustible. I vowed to end them. And it was like, well, do you want to stop? Well, do you want to stop? Do you want to stop? Do you want to stop? You know, he wouldn't tell me. I wanted him to tell me because I, do you want to stop? And I really didn't want to stop. And so this came from on the way there. He wanted to stop and I didn't want to stop. And we stopped. And I was still hanging on to the resentment of like, We'd stopped on the way there. And it turned out fine. It was a fine meal, blah, 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 blah. And then, I mean, we went through this whole thing, like, and I was, you know, just this whole thing. Well, why won't you tell me? Why don't you tell me? It's completely ridiculous. So when we finally got through all that, this is what it came to. I had to say, I didn't have to say, but I said, you know, you're right, I was being really codependent. You know, I was really wanting you to tell me what you wanted so then I could decide what I wanted to do. I used to do that a lot because I'd be like, you know, for if we were going to go out to eat, where do you want to go? He's like, are you trying to figure out what you want to do? I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, and that's kind of part of the, if you will, codependency, growing up in a messed up family. You know, my feelers were always out there for like, what's going on? What's going on? I need to survive. What's going on with everybody else? You know, and I can tell you how you're feeling, like way before I get to like what I'm feeling. And so my husband in his infinite wisdom saw me doing that and just was like, I'm not playing along. And I was really annoyed. And so what I ended up doing was saying, again, you know, like after like some time passed, and it was like the next, like a couple of days later, we were talking about it. And I got angry again. And then I thought, God, I'm just, it's just sort of this righteousness about it. And then I realized what it was that when he wouldn't sort of play along with, I felt really busted. And I don't know if, I'm not sure if I'm really explaining this in a way that you're going to get it, but here I am being codependent. Tom's not playing along. I see that he sees that I'm being codependent and he's not playing along, and I'm annoyed because I feel embarrassed that I'm like my defect of character is right out here for public viewing. And so then I react in a way that's going to cover up. You know, like, well, now I'm just going to be angry because then if I'm angry, well, then I'm righteous, and then you can't see that I'm doing this really stupid thing. Woo! So, and it's just unraveling all that is sometimes hard for me. And, you know, it's funny. I have to say, Susan was like, oh, yeah, you're going to tell us about yourself. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm giving the Dharma talk. I already did that. I already did the how did I get here. You know, I mean, and for me, I mean, the Dharma makes a really huge difference because it's how I put these principles to work in my life every day. That's what really makes a difference. I mean, I am all about the ritual. I love the ritual. I mean, probably like when I was going to ordain, I'm like, you know, like, you know, I'm like, I love the robes, man. They're awesome. but it's really, I love that. I feel like I'm able to put this in, like, you know, where it matters, that in my day-to-day life that I can be more loving, that I can be, you know, not such a jerk. So, long story short, we're discussing this again. I'm still feeling righteous. And still feeling like, ugh. And then I realize, okay, I'm wrong. I'm wrong again. But I don't, you know, there's this tricky thing here, because I did this thing with anger for a long time. I'd blow up, I'd say I was sorry, I'd feel horrible about it, and then time would go by, and then I'd blow up again. So the feeling horrible about it is a payment, kind of. It's a way that I don't actually have to take responsibility for my act. I don't know if I'm saying this right, but like what I realized that it was just a way. It's like when you see somebody who's pregnant and they're smoking, and you're like, and they're like, yeah, I know, I feel horrible about it, but it's still hurting the baby. You know, so even though I feel horrible about blowing up, I still have done the damage. And so being with that, I still have done the damage, and I want to make it right. And the only way I can make it right is by my ongoing life, you know, and I'm going to, you know, it's like that vow and repentance. I mean, I'm going to make this vow. I'm going to try to live it every day. And I'm going to mess up a lot. And because I'm here, I'm going to mess up in public a lot, you know, and then I'm just going to keep trying. So once I got through all of that and realizing, oh, I'm just feeling embarrassed. I'm just feeling embarrassed. Then I was, because there's this thing when that delusion thing, I made an acronym and then I lost it. But it's because they have this acronym for fear. I'm going to tell you the politically correct version. But it's forget everything and run. It's fear. Another one for that is false evidence appearing real. I like that too. So one for like when that kind of pride comes up. Like I just saw a character defect, and I think and I get sort of that I need to protect it. The pride, the acronym I came up with was pride is presenting ridiculous ideas, defending the ego. So that's kind of it. What I wanna do now is to move into this part of that vow and repentance idea is, you know, it's kind of like at the very, you know, at the very beginning when I really wanted to start this path was this desire, this flame, this bodhicitta, this wanting to awaken. You know, it's and there are these moments that I feel like I connect with some bigger thing, whether it's sitting zazen, whether it's being out in nature. A lot of times for me, it's in nature. And so I might actually end a little early, but I want to sing that song for you now. It's called, I got this song, it was a sunrise. Was what it began. Oh, that'd be great. Okay. I messed this up here. Okay. Here this is. Sorry. Thank you. All right. Thank you, dear heart. All right.
Okay.
Yes, I think so. All right. So, thanks for asking me to talk. And thank you so much for your presence here. And I appreciate your nods out there. It's pretty cool. This is called Source of All This Love. Sometimes I look at the sky, dream and I can fly. Weaving in and out of the sunlit clouds in the middle of a blazing sunrise. Ooh, I wish I were a little closer. Ooh, I wish I were a little kinder. I wish I knew a little better. The source of all this love. Sometimes I dream of the ocean coming in a giant wave. I swim like a dolphin deep into the sea. Laughing and jumping and playing, going to the unseen places. I wish I were a little closer. Ooh, I wish I were a little kinder. Ooh, I wish I knew a little better. The source of all this love. Sometimes I see the fullness of the moon in the middle of the afternoon, shining so high and so bright, nowhere left to hide. Ooh, wish I were a little closer. Ooh, I wish I were a little kinder. Ooh, I wish I knew a little better. The source of all this love. Thank you for your help. Oh. So that's all I got. I am. I would be. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to tell you what I think.
Or comment.
Or comment. Or not. Yes, sir.
I've been away for about 6 months. Your honesty and your insights are just really moving this morning. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
I'm curious where the inspiration for that song was. I'm imagining sitting on a dock with the sun rising.
Ah, I was actually looking out the window of our bedroom in Appleton when we lived right. The sun came up in the east. Yeah. And it was like, just saw that, and I just, yep, that's where it came from. Yep. Yes?
I don't think I've laughed so much at a Dharma talk.
Well, that's awesome.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I forgot.
You've ruined Dharma talks forever.
You've raised the bar.
Well, I don't know. You know, we're all a little, you know, like we all have our gifts, right? I mean, I think, who was it? Was it Eleanor Roosevelt? Somebody said, like, if I laugh at myself, I will never cease to run out of material. It's an enormous honor to be here with y'all. I feel really so fortunate to be on this path. I feel so fortunate for this place. I feel so fortunate for my teacher. And I feel like I've just been the recipient and continue to be the recipient of so many other people's bodhisattva vows. So thank you for your practice, and thank you for your commitment to this place and to the path. I'm really grateful.
Closing chant is on the front of your bulletin. May our intention equally penetrate every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way.
Beings are